This is Audible.
BFG by Roald Dahl, read by David Walliams. The witching hour. Sophie couldn't sleep. A brilliant moonbeam was slanting through a gap in the curtains. It was shining right onto her pillow. The other children in the dormitory had been asleep for hours. Sophie closed her eyes and lay quite still. She tried very hard to doze off. It was no good. The moonbeam was like a silver blade slicing through the room onto her face. The house was absolutely silent. No voices came up from downstairs. There were no footsteps on the floor above either. The window behind the curtain was wide open, but nobody was walking on the pavement outside. No cars went by on the street. Not the tiniest sound could be heard anywhere. Sophie had never known such a silence. Perhaps, she told herself, this was what they called the witching hour. The witching hour, somebody had once whispered to her, was a special moment in the middle of the night when every child and every grown-up was in a deep, deep sleep. And all the dark things came out from hiding and had the world to themselves. The moonbeam was brighter than ever on Sophie's pillow. She decided to get out of bed and close the gap in the curtains. You got punished if you were caught out of bed after lights out. Even if you said you had to go to the lavatory, that was not accepted as an excuse, and they punished you just the same. But there was no one about now. Sophie was sure of that. She reached out for her glasses that lay on the chair beside her bed. They had steel rims and very thick lenses, and she could hardly see a thing without them. She put them on, then she slipped out of bed and tiptoed over to the window. When she reached the curtains, Sophie hesitated. She longed to duck underneath them and lean out of the window to see what the world looked like now that the witching hour was at hand. She listened again. Everywhere, it was deathly still. The longing to look out became so strong, she couldn't resist it. Quickly, she ducked under the curtains and leaned out of the window. In the silvery moonlight, the village street she knew so well seemed completely different. The houses looked bent and crooked, like houses in a fairy tale. Everything was pale and ghostly and milky white. Across the road, she could see Mrs. Rance's shop, where you bought buttons and wool and bits of elastic. It didn't look real. There was something dim and misty about that, too. Sophie allowed her eye to travel further and further down the street. Suddenly she froze. There was something coming up the street on the opposite side. It was something black, something tall and black, something very tall and very black and very thin. Who? It wasn't a human. It couldn't be. It was four times as tall as the tallest human. It was so tall, its head was higher than the upstairs windows of the houses. Sophie opened her mouth to scream. But no sound came out. Her throat, like her whole body, was frozen with fright. This was the witching hour, all right. The tall black figure was coming her way. It was keeping very close to the houses across the street, hiding in the shadowy places where there was no moonlight. On and on it came, nearer and nearer. But it was moving in spurts. It would stop, then it would move on. Then it would stop again. But what on earth was it doing? Aha! Sophie could see now what it was up to. It was stopping in front of each house. It would stop and peer into the upstairs window of each house in the street. It actually had to bend down to peer into the upstairs windows. That's how tall it was. It would stop and peer in. Then it would slide on to the next house and stop again and peer in, and so on, all along the street. It was much closer now, and Sophie could see it more clearly. Looking at it carefully, she decided it had to be some kind of person. Obviously, it was not a human, but it was definitely a person. A giant person, perhaps. Sophie stared hard across the misty moonlit street. The giant, if that's what he was wearing a long black cloak. In one hand, he was holding what looked like a very long, thin trumpet. In the other hand, he held a large suitcase. The giant had stopped now right in front of Mr. and Mrs. Gucci's house. The Gucci's had a greengrocer's shop in the middle of the high street, and the family lived above the shop. The two Gucci children slept in the upstairs front room. Sophie knew that. The giant was peering through the window into the room where Michael and Jane Gucci were sleeping. From across the street, Sophie watched and held her breath. She saw the giant step back a pace and put the suitcase down on the pavement. He bent over and opened the suitcase. He took something out of it. It looked like a glass jar, one of those square ones with a screw top. He unscrewed the top of the jar and poured what was in it into the end of the long trumpet thing. Sophie watched, trembling. She saw the giant straighten up again, and she saw him poke the trumpet in through the open upstairs window of the room where the Gucci children were sleeping. She saw the giant take a deep breath, and he blew through the trumpet. No noise came out, but it was obvious to Sophie that whatever had been in the jar had now been blown through the trumpet into the Gucci children's bedroom. What could it be? As the giant withdrew the trumpet from the window and bent down to pick up the suitcase, he happened to turn his head and glance across the street. In the moonlight, Sophie caught a glimpse of an enormous, long, pale, wrinkly face with the most enormous ears. The nose was as sharp as a knife, and above the nose there were two bright flashing eyes, and the eyes were staring straight at Sophie. There was a fierce and devilish look about them. Sophie gave a yelp and pulled back from the window. She flew across the dormitory and jumped into her bed and hid under the blanket. And there she crouched, still as a mouse, and tingling all over. The Snatch. Under the blanket, Sophie waited. After a minute or so, she lifted a corner of the blanket and peeked out. For the second time that night, her blood froze to ice, and she wanted to scream. But no sound came out. There, at the window, with the curtains pushed aside, was the enormous, long, pale, wrinkly face of the giant person staring in. The flashing black eyes were fixed on Sophie's bed. The next moment, a huge hand with pale fingers came snaking in through the window. This was followed by an arm as thick as a tree trunk, and the arm, the hand, the fingers were reaching out across the room towards Sophie's bed. This time, Sophie really did scream, but only for a second, because very quickly, the huge hand clamped down over her blanket, and the scream was smothered by the bedclothes. Sophie, crouching underneath the blanket, felt strong fingers grasping hold of her, and then she was lifted up from her bed, blanket and all, and whisked out of the window. If you can think of anything more terrifying than that happening to you in the middle of the night, then let's hear about it. The awful thing was that Sophie knew exactly what was going on, although she couldn't see it happening. She knew that a monster, or giant, with an enormous long, pale, wrinkly face and dangerous eyes, had plucked her from her bed in the middle of the witching hour, and was now carrying her out through the window, smothered in a blanket. What actually happened next was this. When the giant had got Sophie outside, he arranged the blanket so that he could grasp all the four corners of it at once in one of his huge hands, with Sophie imprisoned inside. In the other hand, he seized the suitcase and the long trumpet thing, and off he ran. Sophie, by squirming around inside the blanket, managed to push the top of her head out through a little gap just below the giant's hand. She stared around her. She saw the village houses rushing by on both sides. The giant was sprinting down the high street. He was running so fast, his black cloak was streaming out behind him like the wings of a bird. Each stride he took was as long as a tennis court. Out of the village he ran, and soon they were racing across the moonlit fields. The hedges dividing the fields were no problem to the giant. He simply strode over them. A wide river appeared in his path. He crossed it in one flying stride. Sophie crouched in the blanket, peering out. She was being bumped against the giant's leg like a sack of potatoes. Over the fields and hedges and rivers they went, and after a while a frightening thought came into Sophie's head. "The giant is running fast," she told herself, "because he is hungry and he wants to get home as quickly as possible. And then he'll have me for breakfast!" The cave. The giant ran on and on. But now, a curious change took place in his way of running. He seemed suddenly to go into a higher gear. Faster and faster he went, and soon he was traveling at such a speed that the landscape became blurred. The wind stung Sophie's cheeks. It made her eyes water. It whipped her head back and whistled in her ears. She could no longer feel the giant's feet touching the ground. She had a weird sensation. They were flying. It was impossible to tell whether they were over land or sea. This giant had some sort of magic in his legs. The wind rushing against Sophie's face became so strong that she had to duck down again into the blanket to prevent her head from being blown away. Was it really possible that they were crossing oceans? It certainly felt that way to Sophie. She crouched in the blanket and listened to the howling of the wind. It went on for what seemed like hours. Then all at once, the wind stopped its howling. The pace began to slow down. Sophie could feel the giant's feet pounding once again over the earth. She poked her head up out of the blanket to have a look. They were in a country of thick forests and rushing rivers. The giant had definitely slowed down and was now running more normally, although normal was a silly word to use to describe a galloping giant. He leaped over a dozen rivers. He went rattling through a great forest, then down into a valley and up over a range of hills as bare as concrete. And soon he was galloping over a desolate wasteland that was not quite of this earth. The ground was flat and pale yellow. Great lumps of blue rock were scattered around, and dead trees stood everywhere like skeletons. The moon had long since disappeared, and now the dawn was breaking. Sophie, still peering out from the blanket, saw suddenly ahead of her a great craggy mountain. The mountain was dark blue, and all around it the sky was gushing and glistening with light. Bits of pale gold were flying among delicate frosty white flakes of cloud, and over to one side the rim of the morning sun was coming up, red as blood. Right beneath the mountain, the giant stopped. He was puffing mightily. His great chest was heaving in and out. He paused to catch his breath. Directly in front of them, lying against the side of the mountain, Sophie could see a massive round stone. It was as big as a house. The giant reached out and rolled the stone to one side as easily as if it had been a football, and now, where the stone had been, there appeared a vast black hole. The hole was so large that the giant didn't even have to duck his head as he went in. He strode into the black hole, still carrying Sophie in one hand, the trumpet and the suitcase in the other. As soon as he was inside, he stopped and turned and rolled the great stone back into place so that the entrance to his secret cave was completely hidden from outside. Now that the entrance had been sealed up, there was not a glint of light inside the cave. All was black. Sophie felt herself being lowered to the ground. Then the giant let go the blanket completely. His footsteps moved away. Sophie sat there in the dark, shivering with fear.
"He's getting ready to eat me," she told herself. "He will probably eat me raw, just as I am. Or perhaps he will boil me first. Or he will have me fried. He will drop me like a rasher of bacon into some gigantic frying pan sizzling with fat."
A blaze of light suddenly lit up the whole place. Sophie blinked and stared. She saw an enormous cavern with a high rocky roof. The walls on either side were lined with shelves, and on the shelves there stood row upon row of glass jars. There were jars everywhere. They were piled up in the corners. They filled every nook and cranny of the cave. In the middle of the floor, there was a table 12 feet high and a chair to match. The giant took off his black cloak and hung it against the wall. Sophie saw that under the cloak, he was wearing a sort of collarless shirt and a dirty old leather waistcoat that didn't seem to have any buttons. His trousers were faded green and were far too short in the legs. On his bare feet, he was wearing a pair of ridiculous sandals that for some reason had holes cut along each side, with the large hole at the end where his toes stuck out. Sophie, crouching on the floor of the cave in her nightie, gazed back at him through thick steel-rimmed glasses. She was trembling like a leaf in the wind, and a finger of ice was running up and down the length of her spine.
"Har!" shouted the giant, walking forward and rubbing his hands together. "What has us got here?"
His booming voice rolled around the walls of the cave like a burst of thunder. The BFG. The giant picked up the trembling Sophie with one hand and carried her across the cave and put her on the table.
"Now he really is going to eat me," Sophie thought.
The giant sat down and stared hard at Sophie. He had truly enormous ears. Each one was as big as the wheel of a truck, and he seemed to be able to move them inwards and outwards from his head as he wished.
"I is hungry," the giant boomed.
He grinned, showing massive square teeth. The teeth were very white and very square, and they sat in his mouth like huge slices of white bread.
"Please don't eat me," Sophie stammered.
The giant let out a bellow of laughter.
"Oh, just because I is a giant, you think I is a man-goblin cannibal," he shouted. "You is about right. Giants is all cannibally and murderful, and they does gobble up human beings. We is in giant country now. Giants is everywhere around. Out there, us has the famous bone-crunching giant. Bone-crunching giant crunches up 2 whopsy-whifflin' human beings for supper every night. Noise is ear-busting. Noise of crunching bones goes crackety-crack for miles around."
"Ouch!"
Sophie said.
"Bone-crunching giant only gobbles human beings from Turkey," the giant said. Every night, Bone Cruncher is galloping off to Turkey to gobble Turks.
Sophie's sense of patriotism was suddenly so bruised by this remark that she became quite angry.
Why Turks? She blurted out. What's wrong with the English? Bone Crunching Giant says Turks is tasting oh ever so much juicier and more scrummy-dilumptious. Bone Cruncher says Turkish human beans has a glamourly flavour. He says Turks from Turkey is tasting of turkey.
I suppose they would, Sophie said.
Of course they would, the giant shouted. Every human being is diddly and different. Some is scrumdiddlyumptious, and some is ucky slush. Greeks is all full of ucky slush. No giant is eating Greeks ever.
Why not? Sophie asked.
Greeks from Greece is all tasting greasy, the giant said.
I imagine that's possible too, Sophie said. She was wondering with a bit of a tremble what all this talking about eating people was leading up to. Whatever happened, she simply must play along with this peculiar giant and smile at his jokes. But were they jokes? Perhaps the great brute was just working up an appetite by talking about food.
As I am saying, the giant went on, all human beings is having different flavors. Human beans from Panama is tasting very strongly of hats.
Why hats? Sophie said.
You is not very clever, the giant said, moving his great ears in and out. I thought all human beings is full of brains, but your head is emptier than a bun dongle.
Do you like vegetables? Sophie asked, hoping to steer the conversation towards a slightly less dangerous kind of food.
You is trying to change the subject, the giant said sternly. We is having an interesting babblement about the taste of the human being. The human being is not a vegetable.
Oh, but the bean is a vegetable, Sophie said.
Not the human bean, the giant said. The human bean has two legs, and a vegetable has no legs at all.
Sophie didn't argue any more. The last thing she wanted to do was make the giant cross.
The human bean, the giant went on, is coming in dillions of different flavors. For instance, human beans from Wales is tasting very woozy of fish. There is something very fishy about Wales.
You mean whales? Sophie said. Whales is something quite different.
Whales is whales, the giant said. Don't gobble funk around with words. I will now give you another example. Human beings from Jersey has a most disgustable woolly tickle on the tongue, the giant said. Human beings from Jersey is tasting of cardigans.
You mean jerseys, Sophie said.
You are once again gobble-funking, the giant shouted. Don't do it! This is a serious and snitching subject. May I continue?
Please do, Sophie said.
Danes from Denmark is tasting ever so much of dogs, the giant went on.
Of course, Sophie said. They taste of Great Danes.
Wrong, cried the giant, slapping his thigh. Danes from Denmark is tasting doggy because they is tasting of Labradors.
Then what do the people of Labrador taste of? Sophie asked.
Danes! The giant cried triumphantly. Great Danes!
Aren't you getting a bit mixed up? Sophie said.
I is a very mixed up giant, the giant said. But I does do my best, and I is not nearly as mixed up as the other giants. I know one who gallops all the way to Wellington for his supper.
Wellington, Sophie said. Where is Wellington?
Your head is full of squash flies, the giant said. Wellington is in New Zealand. The human beings in Wellington has an especially scrumdiddlyumptious taste, so says the welly-eating giant.
What do the people of Wellington taste of? Sophie asked.
Boots, the giant said.
Of course, Sophie said. I should have known.
Sophie decided that this conversation had now gone on long enough. If she was going to be eaten, she'd rather get it over and done with right away than be kept hanging around any more.
What sort of human beings do you eat?
She asked, trembling.
Me?
Shouted the giant, his mighty voice making the glass jars rattle on their shelves.
Me gobbling up human beings? This I never. The others, yes. Oh, the others is gobbling them up every night, but not me. I is a freaky giant. I is a nice and jumbly giant. I is the only nice and jumbly giant in giant country. I is the big friendly giant. I is the BFG. What is your name?
My name is Sophie, Sophie said, hardly daring to believe the good news she had just heard.
The Giants.
But if you are so nice and friendly, Sophie said, then why did you snatch me from my bed and run away with me?
Because you saw me, the big friendly giant answered. If anyone is ever seeing a giant, he or she must be taken away hipswitch.
Why? Asked Sophie.
Well, first of all, said the BFG, human beings is not really believing in giants, is they? Human beings is not thinking we exist.
I do, Sophie said.
Ah, but that is only because you have seen me, cried the BFG. I cannot possibly allow anyone, even little girls, to be seeing me and staying at home. The first thing you would be doing, you would be scuttling around yodeling the news that you were actually seeing a giant. And then a great giant hunt, a mighty giant look-see, would be starting up all over the world, with the human beings all rummaging for the great giant you saw and getting wildly excited. People would be coming rushing and bushing after me with goodness knows what, and they would be catching me and locking me into a cage to be stared at. They would be putting me into the zoo, or the bunkum house, with all those squiggling hippo dumplings, and crocodile dillies.
Sophie knew that what the giant said was true. If any person reported actually having seen a giant haunting the streets of a town at night, there would most certainly be a terrific hullabaloo across the world.
I will bet you, the BFG went on, that you would have been splashing the news all over the wonky world, wouldn't you, if I hadn't wiggled you away?
I suppose I would, Sophie said.
And that would never do, said the BFG.
So, what will happen to me now? Sophie asked.
If you do go back, you will be telling the world, said the BFG. Most likely on the telly-telly bunkum box and the radio squeaker. So you will just have to be staying here with me for the rest of your life.
Oh, no, cried Sophie.
Oh, yes, said the BFG. But I am warning you not ever to go whiffling about out of this cave without eyes with you, or you will be coming to an ucky-mucky end. I is showing you now who is going to eat you up if they is ever catching even one tiny little glimpse of you.
The big friendly giant picked Sophie off the table and carried her to the cave entrance. He rolled the huge stone to one side and said,
Peep out over there, little girl, and tell me what you is seeing.
Sophie, sitting on the BFG's hand, peeped out of the cave. The sun was now up and shining fiery hot over the great yellow wasteland with its blue rocks and dead trees.
Is you seeing them? The BFG asked.
Sophie, squinting through the glare of the sun, saw several tremendous tall figures moving among the rocks about 500 yards away. Three or four others were sitting quite motionless on the rocks themselves.
"This is giant country," the BFG said. "Those is all giants. Every one."
It was a brain-boggling sight. The giants were all naked, except for a sort of short skirt around their waists, and their skins were burnt brown by the sun. But it was the sheer size of each one of them that boggled Sophie's brain most of all. They were simply colossal, far taller and wider than the big friendly giant upon whose hand she was now sitting. And oh, how ugly they were! Many of them had large bellies. All of them had long arms and big feet. They were too far away for their faces to be seen clearly, and perhaps that was a good thing.
"What on earth are they doing?" Sophie asked.
"Nothing," said the BFG. "They is just moochling and foochling around and waiting for the night to come. Then they will all be galloping off to places where people is living to find their suppers."
"You mean to Turkey?" Sophie said.
"Bone-crunching giant will be galloping to Turkey, of course," said the BFG. "But the others will be whiffling off to all sorts of flung-away places like Wellington for the booty flavour and Panama for the hattie taste. Every giant is having his own favourite hunting ground."
"Do they ever go to England?" Sophie asked.
"Often," said the BFG. "They say the English is tasting ever so wonderfully of crud scallop."
"I'm not sure I quite know what that means," Sophie said.
"Meanings is not important," said the BFG. "I cannot be right all the time. Quite often I is left instead of right."
"And are all those beastly giants over there really going off again tonight to eat people?" Sophie asked.
"All of them is guzzling human beings every night," the BFG answered. "All of them, excepting me. That is why you will be coming to an ucky-mucky end if any of them should ever be getting his gogglers upon you. You would be swallowed up like a piece of frumpkin pie, all in one dollop."
"But eating people is horrible," Sophie cried. "It's frightful. Why doesn't someone stop them?"
"And who, please, is going to be stopping them?" asked the BFG.
"Couldn't you?" said Sophie.
"Never in a pig's whistle," cried the BFG. "All of those man-eating giants is enormous and very fierce. They is all at least 2 times my wideness and 2x my royal highness."
"Twice as high as you," cried Sophie.
"Easily that," said the BFG. "You is seeing them in the distance, but just wait till you get them close up. Those giants is all at least 50 feet tall, with huge muscles and cockles alive-alive-oh. I is the titchy one. I is the runt. 24 feet is puddle nuts in giant country."
"You mustn't feel bad about it," Sophie said. "I think you are just great. Why, even your toes must be as big as sausages."
"Bigger," said the BFG, looking pleased. "They is as big as bumble hammers."
"How many giants are there out there?" Sophie asked.
9 altogether, answered the BFG.
"That means," said Sophie, "that somewhere in the world, every single night, 9 wretched people get carried away and eaten alive."
"More," said the BFG. "It is all depending, you see, on how big the human beings is. Japanese beans is very small, so a giant will need to gobble up about 6 Japanese before he is feeling full up. Others, like the Norway people and the Yankee Doodles, is ever so much bigger, and usually 2 or 3 of those makes a good tuck-in."
"But do these disgusting giants go to every single country in the world?" Sophie asked.
"All countries except Greece is getting visited sometime or another," the BFG answered. "The country which a giant visits is dependent on how he is feeling. If it is very warm weather, and a giant is feeling as hot as a sizzle pan, he will probably go galloping far up to the Frisbee North to get himself an Eskimo or two to cool him down. A nice fat Eskimo to a giant is like a lovely ice cream lolly to you.
I'll take your word for it, Sophie said.
And then again, if it is a frosty night and the giant is fridging with cold, he will probably point his nose towards the sweltering hotlands to guzzle up a few Hottentots to warm him up.
How perfectly horrible, Sophie said.
Nothing hots a cold giant up like a hot Hottentot, the BFG said.
And if you were to put me down on the ground and I was to walk out among them now, Sophie said, would they really eat me up?
Like a whiffswiddle, cried the BFG. And what is more, you is so small, they wouldn't even have to chew you. The first one to be seeing you would pick you up in his fingers, and down you'd go like a drop of drain water.
Let's go back inside, Sophie said. I hate even watching them. The Marvelous Ears. Back in the cave, the big friendly giant sat Sophie down once again on the enormous table.
Is you quite snugly there in your nighty? He asked. You isn't fridgy cold.
I'm fine, Sophie said.
I cannot help thinking, said the BFG, about your poor mother and father. By now they must be jipping and scumping all over the house, shouting, Hello, hello, where is Sophie gone?
I don't have a mother and father, Sophie said. They both died when I was a baby.
Oh, you poor little scrumplet, cried the BFG. Is you not missing them very badly?
Not really, Sophie said, because I never knew them.
You is making me sad, the BFG said, rubbing his eyes.
Don't be sad, Sophie said. No one is going to be worrying too much about me. That place you took me from was the village orphanage. We're all orphans in there.
You is an orphan?
Yes.
How many is there in there?
10 of us, Sophie said. All little girls.
Was you happy there?
The BFG asked. I hated it, Sophie said. The woman who ran it was called Mrs. Clonkers, and if she caught you breaking any of the rules, like getting out of bed at night or not folding up your clothes, you got punished.
How is you getting punished?
She locked us in the dark cellar for a day and a night, without anything to eat or drink.
The rotten old rot-rasper, cried the BFG.
It was horrid, Sophie said. We used to dread it. There were rats down there. We could hear them creeping about.
The filthy old fizzwiggler, shouted the BFG.
That is the horridest thing I is hearing for years. You is making me sadder than ever.
All at once, a huge tear that would have filled a bucket rolled down one of the BFG's cheeks and fell with a splash on the floor. It made quite a puddle. Sophie watched with astonishment. What a strange and moody creature this is, she thought.
One moment he is telling me my head is full of squash flies, and the next moment his heart is melting for me because Mrs. Clonkers locks us in the cellar.
The thing that worries me, Sophie said, is having to stay in this dreadful place for the rest of my life. The orphanage was pretty awful, but I wouldn't have been there forever, would I?
All is my fault, the BFG said.
I is the one who kid-snatched you.
Yet another enormous tear welled from his eye and splashed onto the floor. Now I come to think of it, I won't actually be here all that long, Sophie said.
I is afraid you will,
the BFG said. No, I won't, Sophie said. Those brutes out there are bound to catch me sooner or later and have me for tea.
I is never letting that happen, the BFG said.
For a few moments the cave was silent. Then Sophie said, "May I ask you a question?" The BFG wiped the tears from his eyes with the back of his hand and gave Sophie a long, thoughtful stare.
"Shoot away," he said.
"Would you please tell me what you were doing in our village last night? Why you were poking that long trumpet thing into the Gucci children's bedroom and then blowing through it?"
"Aha!" cried the BFG, sitting up suddenly in his chair. "Now we is getting nosier than a Parker."
"And the suitcase you were carrying," Sophie said. "What on earth was that all about?" The BFG stared suspiciously at the small girl sitting cross-legged on the table.
"You is asking me to tell you whoopsie big secrets," he said. "Secrets that nobody is ever hearing before."
"I won't tell a soul," Sophie said. "I swear it. How could I anyway? I'm stuck here for the rest of my life."
"You could be telling the other giants."
"No, I couldn't," Sophie said. "You told me they would eat me up the moment they saw me."
"And so they would," said the BFG. "You is a human being, and human beings is like straw buncles and cream to those giants."
"If they are going to eat me the moment they see me, then I wouldn't have time to tell them anything, would I?" Sophie said.
"You wouldn't," said the BFG.
"Then why did you say I might?"
"Because I is brimful of buzzburgers," the BFG said. "If you listen to everything I'm saying, you will be getting earache."
"Please tell me what you were doing in our village," Sophie said. "I promise you can trust me."
"Would you teach me how to make an elephant?" the BFG asked.
"What do you mean?" Sophie said.
"I would dearly love to have an elephant to ride on," the BFG said dreamily. "I would so much love to have a jumbly big elephant and go riding through green forests picking peachy fruits off the trees all day long. This is a sizzling hot muck-frumping country we is living in. Nothing grows in it except snozcumbers. I would love to go somewhere else and pick peachy fruits in the early morning from the back of an elephant."
Sophie was quite moved by this curious statement. "Perhaps one day we will get you an elephant," she said, "and peachy fruits as well. Now tell me what you were doing in our village."
"If you is really wanting to know what I am doing in your village," the BFG said, "I is blowing a dream into the bedroom of those children."
"Blowing a dream?" Sophie said.
"What do you mean?" "I is a dream-blowing giant," the BFG said. "When all the other giants is galloping off every what way in which to swallow up human beings, I is scuttling away to other places to blow dreams into the bedrooms of sleeping children. Nice dreams. Lovely golden dreams. Dreams that has given the dreamers a happy time."
"Now, hang on a minute," Sophie said. "Where do you get these dreams?"
"I collect them,"
the BFG said, waving an arm towards all the rows and rows of bottles on the shelves.
"I has billions of them."
"You can't collect a dream," Sophie said. "A dream isn't something you can catch hold of."
"You is never going to understand about it," the BFG said. "That is why I is not wishing to tell you."
"Oh, please tell me," Sophie said. "I will understand. Go on, tell me how you collect dreams. Tell me everything." The BFG settled himself comfortably in his chair and crossed his legs.
"Dreams," he said, "is very mysterious things. They is floating around in the air like little wispy misty bubbles, and all the time they is searching for sleeping people."
"Can you see them?" Sophie asked.
"Never at first.
Then how do you catch them if you can't see them? Sophie asked.
Ah, said the BFG. Now we's getting on to the dark and dusky secrets.
I won't tell a soul.
I is trusting you, the BFG said.
He closed his eyes and sat quite still for a moment, while Sophie waited.
A dream, he said, as it goes whiffling through the night air, is making a tiny little buzzing, humming noise. But this little buzzy hum is so silvery soft, it is impossible for a human being to be hearing it.
Can you hear it? Sophie asked. The BFG pointed up at his enormous truck wheel ears, which he now began to move in and out. He performed this exercise proudly, with a little proud smile on his face.
Is you seeing these? He asked.
How could I miss them? Sophie said.
They maybe is looking a bit preposterous to you, the BFG said. But you must believe me when I say they is very extra usual ears indeed. They is not to be coughed at.
I'm quite sure they're not, Sophie said.
They is allowing me to hear absolutely every single twiddly little thing.
You mean you can hear things I can't hear? Sophie said.
You is deaf as a dumpling compared with me, cried the BFG. You is hearing only thumping loud noises with those little earwigs of yours, but I am hearing all the secret whisperings of the world.
Such as what? Sophie asked.
In your country, he said, I is hearing the footsteps of a ladybird as she goes walking across a leaf.
Honestly, Sophie said, beginning to be impressed.
What's more, I is hearing those footsteps very loud, the BFG said. When a ladybird is walking across a leaf, I is hearing her feet going clumpity-clump-clump like giant's footsteps.
Good gracious me, Sophie said. What else can you hear?
I is hearing the little ants chittering to each other as they scuttle around in the soil.
You mean you can hear ants talking?
Every single word, the BFG said. Although I is not exactly understanding their language.
Go on, Sophie said.
Sometimes, on a very clear night, the BFG said, and if I is swiggling my ears in the right direction,
and here he swiveled his great ears upwards so they were facing the ceiling.
If I is swiggling them like this and the night is very clear,
I is sometimes hearing faraway music coming from the stars in the sky. A queer little shiver passed through Sophie's body. She sat very quiet, waiting for more.
My ears is what told me you was watching me out of your window last night, the BFG said.
But I didn't make a sound, Sophie said.
I was hearing your heart beating across the road, the BFG said, loud as a drum.
Go on, Sophie said, please.
I can hear plants and trees.
Do they talk? Sophie asked.
They is not exactly talking, the BFG said, but they is making noises. For instance, if I come along and I is picking a lovely flower, if I is twisting the stem of the flower till it breaks, then the plant is screaming. I can hear it screaming and screaming very clear.
You don't mean it, Sophie cried. How awful.
It is screaming just like you would be screaming if someone was twisting your arm right off.
Is that really true? Sophie asked.
You think I is Swiss fiddling you?
It is rather hard to believe.
Then I stop him right here, said the BFG sharply. I is not wishing to be called a fibster.
Oh, no, I'm not calling you anything, Sophie cried. I believe you, I do really. Please, go on. The BFG gave her a long, hard stare. Sophie looked right back at him, her face open to his. I believe you, she said softly. She had offended him. She could see that.
I wouldn't ever be fibbling to you, he said.
I know you wouldn't, Sophie said, but you must understand that it isn't easy to believe such amazing things straight away.
I understand that, the BFG said.
So do please forgive me and go on, she said. He waited a while longer, and then he said,
It is the same with trees as it is with flowers. If I is chopping an axe into the trunk of a big tree, I is hearing a terrible sound coming from inside the heart of the tree.
What sort of sound? Sophie asked.
A soft, moaning sound, the BFG said. It is like the sound an old man is making, and he is dying slowly. He paused. The cave was very silent. Trees is living and growing just like you and me, he said. They is alive. So is plants.
He was sitting very straight in his chair now, his hands clasped tightly together in front of him. His face was bright, his eyes round and bright as two stars.
Such wonderful and terrible sounds I is hearing, he said. Some of them you would never wish to be hearing yourself, but some is like glorious music.
He seemed almost to be transfigured by the excitement of his thoughts. His face was beautiful in its blaze of emotions. Tell me more about them, Sophie said quietly.
You just ought to be hearing the little moiseys talking, he said. Little moiseys is always talking to each other, and I is hearing them as loud as my own voice.
What do they say? Sophie asked.
Only the moiseys know that, he said. Spiders is also talking a great deal. You might not be thinking it, but spiders is the most tremendous natterboxes. And when they is spinning their webs, they is singing all the time. They is singing sweeter than a nightingale.
Who else do you hear? Sophie asked.
One of the biggest chat bags is the cattle piddlers, the BFG said.
What do they say?
They is arguing all the time about who is going to be the prettiest buttery fly. That is all they is ever talking about.
Is there a dream floating around in here now? Sophie asked. The BFG moved his great ears this way and that, listening intently. He shook his head.
There is no dream in here, he said, except in the bottles. I has a special place to go for catching dreams. They is not often come into giant country.
How do you catch them?
The same way you is catching buttery flies, the BFG answered. With a net.
He stood up and crossed over to a corner of the cave where a pole was leaning against the wall. The pole was about 30 feet long, and there was a net on the end of it.
Here is the dream catcher,
he said, grasping the pole in one hand.
Every morning I is going out and snitching new dreams to put in my bottles.
Suddenly, he seemed to lose interest in the conversation.
I is getting hungry, he said. It is time for eats.
Snozcumbers. But if you don't eat people like all the others, Sophie said, then what do you live on?
That is a squelching, tricky problem around here, the BFG answered. In this slosh-flunking giant country, happy eats like pineapples and pigwinkles is simply not growing. Nothing is growing, except for one extremely icky-poo vegetable. It is called the snozcumber.
The snozcumber? Cried Sophie. There's no such thing. The BFG looked at Sophie and smiled, showing about 20 of his square white teeth.
Yesterday, he said, we was not believing in giants, was we? Today, we is not believing in snarscumbers. Just because we happen not to have actually seen something with our own two little winkles, we think it is not existing. What about, for instance, the great squizzy Scotch hopper?
I beg your pardon, Sophie said.
And the humble crimp.
What's that? Sophie said.
And the rap rascal.
The what? Sophie said.
And the crump scuttle.
Are they animals? Sophie asked.
These common animals, said the BFG contemptuously. I is not a very no-old giant myself, but it seems to me that you is an absolutely know-nothing human being. Your brain is full of rotten wool.
You mean cotton wool, Sophie said.
What I mean and what I say is two different things, the BFG announced rather grandly. I will now show you a snozcumber.
The BFG flung open a massive cupboard and took out the weirdest-looking thing Sophie had ever seen. It was about half as long again as an ordinary man, but was much thicker. It was as thick around its girth as a perambulator. It was black with white stripes along its length, and it was covered all over with coarse knobs.
"Here is the repulsant snozcumber," cried the BFG, waving it about. I squoggle it, I misspise it, I dispunge it. But because I is refusing to gobble up human beans like the other giants, I must spend my life guzzling up icky-poo snozcumbers instead. If I don't, I will be nothing but skin and groans.
You mean skin and bones, Sophie said.
I know it is bones, the BFG said. But please understand that I cannot be helping it if I sometimes is saying things a little squiggly. I is trying my very best all the time.
The big friendly giant looked suddenly so forlorn that Sophie got quite upset. I'm sorry, she said. I didn't mean to be rude.
There were never any schools to teach me talking in giant country, the BFG said sadly.
But couldn't your mother have taught you? Sophie asked.
My mother? Cried the BFG. Giants don't have mothers. Surely you is knowing that.
I did not know that, Sophie said.
Who ever heard of a woman giant? Shouted the BFG, waving the snozcumber around his head like a lasso. There never was a woman giant, and there never will be one. Giants is always men.
Sophie felt herself getting a little muddled. In that case, she said, how were you born?
Giants isn't born, the BFG answered. Giants appears, and that's all there is to it. They simply appears, the same way as the sun and the stars.
And when did you appear? Sophie asked.
Now how on earth could I be knowing a thing like that? Said the BFG. It was so long ago, I couldn't count.
You mean you don't even know how old you are?
No giant is knowing that, the BFG said. All I is knowing about myself is that I is very old, very, very old and crumply, perhaps as old as the earth.
What happens when a giant dies? Sophie asked.
Giants is never dying, the BFG answered. Sometimes, and quite suddenly, a giant is disappearing, and nobody is ever knowing where he goes to. But mostly, us giants is simply going on and on, like whiffsy time twiddlers.
The BFG was still holding the awesome snozcumber in his right hand, and now he put one end into his mouth and bit off a huge hunk of it. He started crunching it up, and the noise he made was like the crunching of lumps of ice.
It's filthin',
he spluttered, speaking with his mouth full and spraying large pieces of snozcumber like bullets in Sophie's direction. Sophie hopped around on the tabletop, ducking out of the way.
It's disgusterous, the BFG gurgled. It's sickable. It's rotsome, it's maggot-wise, try yourself, this foulsome snozcumber.
No, thank you, Sophie said, backing away.
It's all you're going to be guzzling around here from now on, so you might as well get used to it.